We certainly welcome to this assembly those who are visiting with us today. Perhaps the holiday weekend has brought you this direction. Some are members of families that are a part of this group of Christians, but isn't it great to know that wherever you go, there are brothers and sisters there that you can see and rejoice with and worship God with. That's a happy thought as we consider what God has done in His family. I don't want this to appear to be a matter of boasting. I report what I'm doing because you are so much a part of that. And so the reason we were in Jacksonville, among others, was to meet with the editors of a magazine with which I had to do, but there was a lectureship down there I spoke on from the beginning, God's marriage law, and what it means to honor your father and your mother, along with other men who were there, and we picked up a lot of greetings to people who were in this congregation. The Bowman sent their greetings, the Ray sent their greetings. Harry Pickup sent his greetings. He was there speaking in the morning sessions on God's righteousness and human relationships. So it was a good week, and I didn't miss too many opportunities to preach, and you'll be glad to know that I was forced while there to speak 30 minutes, no more. I mean, that was it. And Ed Harrell was rather gloating in the fact that he achieved it in my case. He said he had laid the law down. It was none. So I admit this to you, that I did it so that you will find me very vulnerable in the future. This next week we'll be in Lexington with the University Heights Church. They're in their new building there, and they're having a lectureship. I'll be there Monday through Thursday. And I'm saying that if you want to come and be a part of that, well, I know they'd be delighted to have you. D. Bowman is speaking. Robert Jackson is going to be speaking in our brief winter session this next January. We'll be there preaching, and there the young man from Frank, who just moved there, very fine young man, and doing good work over there, will also be speaking. It'll just be good to see you, brethren. I want to share with you today some thoughts about a particular parable that Jesus taught on Tuesday, the last week of his life, and it's found in the 21st chapter of Matthew, beginning with verse 33. And so open up your Bible. I know that I'm a handsome sight up here, but you just look inside the text and let's see what the Lord has said to us. Here, he says, another parable. There was a man that was a householder, a landowner, who planted a vineyard and set a hedge about it and digged a wine press in it and built a tower and let it out to husbandmen, or vine dressers, and went into another country. And when the season of the fruits drew near, he sent his servants to the husbandmen to receive his fruits. And the husbandmen took his servants, and beat one, and killed another, and stoned another. And again he sent another, or sent other servants, more than the first, and they did to them in the same way. But afterward, he sent his son to them, saying, they will reverence my son. But the husbandmen, when they saw the son, said among themselves, this is the heir. Come, let us kill him and take his inheritance. And they took him and cast him forth out of the vineyard and killed him. When therefore the Lord of the vineyard shall come, what will he do to those husbandmen? This was addressed to the Jewish leaders. It came on the heels of several events that made it obvious that the Lord, who had in time past said, my time is not yet. 7th chapter of John, when his own brother said, it's time to go to the Feast of Tabernacles. He said, you go ahead. This is your time. It's not my time. But when these words are written, his time has come. And whereas in the past he would walk away from confrontations, this time he confronts. He confronted them when he came into the city on Monday and drove out the money changers from the temple. He had frightened the leaders of the city almost into apoplexy on Sunday when he had come to great acclaim into the city. And they had urged him to stop these people from saying these outrageous things about you. And he had said, if I stop them, the stones will cry out. And the same on Tuesday. He is confronted. They ask him, by what authority do you do these things? And he had already given them that authority. He had said, my Father's house is a house of prayer for all nations, and you have made it a den of robbers. He had quoted the scripture. It is written. And besides all that, why would you ask a man who only a few weeks before in Bethany had raised a man from the dead after he had been in the grave 4 days? And you will ask him by what authority he's doing these things? They really didn't care about divine authority. It would have been good if they had, but they really wanted his parade permit. Who gave you the authority to come into town and do these things? Who are you? And then he spoke a little parable to them. And that's the reason this text says he spoke another parable. And the first one was about a man that had two sons. And he said the first one was asked by the father to go work in the vineyard, which was, of course, the very thing that made possible his livelihood. He would have had nothing to eat, clothes to wear, no place to stay if it hadn't been for that vineyard. And he said, I go, sir. Very polite young man. But he didn't go. And then he came to the second son, and he said, go work today in my vineyard. And the boy said, I will not. But afterward he repented and went. And Jesus said, and it's pointed for the rulers of the Jews who did the will of his father. And in that little parable is seen the sinners and the tax collectors and all those egregiously wicked people that the Pharisees looked down their nose at. And they're the ones who said so rebelliously, living their lives without a concern for God, we're not about to do what's right. And but afterward, changed their mind. But that polite young man, that reverent young man, that respectful young man, that religious young man didn't do it. And in that, he portrayed the leaders of the people. Now, he doesn't let them go. They'd have been glad to have been let go about that time. Because they're seeing where he's going. The astonishing thing about this parable is they didn't see it coming. They walked right into this one with their heads high and just got clobbered. If you'll notice the story, it's really something that is foreign to us. We don't know much about vineyards in Kentucky. I'm sure there are some places there might be a vineyard, but we don't know much about that. We know about land, and we know about owning land, and we know about leasing land, and we know about being tenant farmers. We are farming land that's not ours. And we understand about the kind of contracts that are made in connection with that you would either pay a part of the produce, or you'll pay so much money every year, whether it produces anything or not. Or you'll get so much to produce whether it's a good year or a bad year. That is to say, a certain quantity. Any kind of agreement can be made. But the tenant does not own the farm. And what these tenants decided was that they had worked really hard. Discounting the fact that there wouldn't have been a vineyard if they hadn't been fortunate enough to have this man let it out to them. That he was the one who worked laboriously to see that those vines were planted. That he's the one who heads it about with a fine wall, probably masonry. keep out predators. That he's the one that erected a tower. Maybe to house the fruits, but certainly to be able to allow those who were in the vineyard to look out and be sure that nothing untoward was happening in the vineyard. Now, I will tell you that if you've read the 5th chapter of Isaiah, you know that the Lord had a long time ago said that Israel is my vineyard. And when I came to my vineyard looking for grapes, what I found was wild grapes. And I'm going to break the walls down. Tear down the tower. And it was the voice of doom and judgment out of the mouth of Isaiah against a nation of rebels. But these men didn't seem to see that coming. Ordinary thing in those days for a landowner to be absent. Go to another country. This was a very troubled time in the history of this nation. And life was dangerous. And so often men would buy property, get out of the territory. I don't know what the circumstance here was because Jesus does not tell us. But the focus of the parable is on the tenants who decide somewhere along the line that we really deserve to have this vineyard. Or at least they decided we want it. I don't know how long it was until grapes began to be born by these vines. It doesn't happen the first year. I'd like it that way, but you have to wait for fruit. Fruit trees, third year maybe you'll get a little bit. Fourth year it starts, fifth year in many cases with nut trees. And so with vineyards it takes time, and so he was patient. And then he sends his servants to receive what was his due. They treat them abominably, not just one, but when another comes. At last it's murder. And then finally when several come, it's the same thing. One commentary on this parable said that these were unusual tenants in the way they behaved. I tell you, they're not so unusual as the landowner in what he did. If I had sent one servant to that vineyard, and all they'd done to him was brutalize him, or they'd just spat in his face and sent him on his way rejoicing, I'd have had something to say about that, but I would not have sent any more. And when I sent one and he got clobbered and murdered, I wouldn't have sent more. It'd been over. But this landowner kept on sending them, even though they were killing them. And he had to know when he sent his own son down there that he was sending him into the most perilous kind of situation. But he said, they'll reverence my son. They will listen to him. They didn't listen to him. It was just an opportunity. And they said, I mean, this is the son. This is the heir. Let's kill him and then it really will be ours. We'll take the vineyard for ourselves. And they did. And you notice Jesus, as he concludes the parable, asks the question. And here is a marvel to me that they are still willing to answer, oblivious to what is about to happen to them. He asked them in verse 40, as he concludes the parable, what will the Lord of that vineyard do to those vine dressers, those husbandmen? And they say to him, he will miserably destroy those miserable men and will let out the vineyard to other husbandmen who will render to him the fruits in their season. And who had they judged? Who had they judged? Remember David confronted by the prophet telling the story of the little ewe lamb? And when Nathan had completed that story, David was livid with rage against the injustice of a man who would seize his poor neighbor's pet lamb and feed him to his guests for dinner when he had the hills full of flocks of his own. And Nathan said, you are the man. Now, they walked into this thing with their heads up. In the first place, he got them to face the fact that they hadn't obeyed God, even though they were very religious and very polite and evidently reverential, but they hadn't obeyed God. Now he's going to get them to pronounce judgment upon themselves. He is confrontational. The time comes in the life of the Lord when he just comes at you straight on. And it's time to do that because all the other efforts have failed. And so Jesus said, that's right. That is exactly right. The kingdom will be taken away from you and given to other men who will bear the fruits thereof. I believe with all my heart that people who take what God gives them and use it in a godly way will be receiving more. And I don't mean more money. Please don't think in those terms. But I mean more opportunity. And more joy from the opportunity. And that people who don't use what he's given them and put in their keeping are going to lose what they've got. And the principle of use it or lose it is a very true one. But I want to take up now just the application of this parable for ourselves. Three times in the Gospels this parable is recorded, which would tell us that it was something that the Lord wanted us to pay attention to. There's not any mistaking Jesus' intention as he tells this parable. John Ogilvie, in his book on the parables, which he calls the Autobiography of God, and he says these parables are revealing the heart of God, he's really right about this one because it's hardly a parable. It's almost like an allegory. Most parables have one point. Don't make them walk on all fours. Just one point. Don't take all those details as having any meaning. That just fills out the story. It's got one point. But in this one, it's different. This is virtually an allegory when everything in it has meaning. Autobiography of God, yes. It's an autobiography of God in the sense it tells the story of God's dealings with his people. And it encapsulates all that Old Testament history of God sending one prophet after another, one prophet after another, and every one of them abused and sent away and rejected. And that's the story. And it's the story that Stephen told as he defended himself before the Sanhedrin in the 7th chapter of Acts. And he said, which of the prophets did your fathers not persecute and kill those that are sent to them? You're just like them, he said. And that's the story that sometimes the Jews wanted to paste over. They wanted to act as though they'd always been good. They would adorn the tombs of the prophets of the past, but they were just like their fathers who killed them in the first place. And so those were the servants. That's pretty clear. And who was the owner of the vineyard? Well, that was God. That's obvious. And who was the son that was sent? Well, that's the Messiah. And in this case, it's Jesus. And who are the vine dressers? Who are the husbands? Well, those are the rulers of the nation. The very ones he's talking to, these chief priests. Now, I tell you, nothing had changed in the attitude of the rulers of Israel. Jerusalem was their city. The vineyard belonged to them. And when the sun came on that Sunday with such acclaim, they didn't like that a bit. He threatened their authority. He threatened their safe place. And therefore, they were reacting. They had toward that city the same imperious defensiveness as those vine dressers did about the vineyard. And they wanted no one to be a threat, especially some irregular rabbi from Nazareth. And so when Jesus rode into the city, it was like the landowner's son coming in. The parallel is powerful. And this parable was intended to be a frightening introduction to what they were like. I mean, he held up the mirror. I'd like to do a little bit of that this morning for myself and all of you. What does this parable say to us? First of all, it's a part of a contemporary religious system. What about all these churches that are around the city of Louisville? Have they seized the vineyard? Or do they really acknowledge the owner?
And do they give him what he's asking for? That's an important question. Even institutionally. We have the belief in this country that it doesn't make any difference. If you go to church, you go to church. You worship God, you worship God. And I'm rather confident that the truth of the matter was that those fellows that were listening to Jesus on this occasion would have about the same attitude. Look, we're the servants of God. We are the leaders of the people in worshiping and serving God. And they would have said a lot about the law and a lot about God, who is the God of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. But they did not do his will, and I'll tell you something else, they didn't teach it right either. They had seized the vineyard. They were using religion to enhance themselves and to enlarge themselves, and it was not God's agenda that drove them. That became apparent. It was theirs. And don't you believe that just because people in this generation get up and talk about God and Jesus and they meet together in large churches that somehow or another that is a guarantee that the agenda that God has given is the agenda they're following. That's not necessarily true. And it wasn't then. We have to open our eyes to this. That's what Jesus meant. When the Son came, they did not reverence the Son. They killed him. And he knew the road they were on, and he was warning them in this very powerful parable of where this thing was going to lead. But they did not listen. Evidence of the fact that people have seized the vineyard of God for themselves is the fact they call it after names you never heard of. And they have their own revered creed books that are supposed to express their will for this thing. And of course they say it's the will of God, but the will of God's in this book. So, while they do all this, and praise God, and speak about the Messiah, they may just be like these Jewish rulers. Religious men. But what does this parable say to us as human beings, as individuals? I think something powerful comes out of it there. The privileges we have. First of all, I speak to those of us who are simply men and women living in God's world. Think about it. Life. Just stop for a moment and feel the blood pulsing through your veins. The alertness of your mind. Think about that. An intellect that has the power to do all kinds of remarkable things, remember things, to be a consistent person because we have a memory of all the past that drawn together is who we are. And we recognize other people, or at least most of the time. And family ties are developed because of that. Because I know who my mother is, and I know who my father is, and I know who my brothers and sisters are. And I remember all the things we've done together, and that there is a sense of oneness in that relationship. That's a beautiful thing. That's a gift of God. And not only life, biological life, intellect, but will. The ability to choose between alternatives. Isn't that remarkable? All these opportunities, but we can become what we want to become because we can make the choice. And a spirit within us that is akin to his. Conscience, moral capacity. We have been equipped to live fully and joyously in this life. And Paul, when he was speaking in Lystra in Acts 14, verse 7, he said he did not leave himself without witness, but gave us food and fruitful seasons. God has been good, is good to us, and we need to sit down once in a while and think about it. I tell you, it takes a dense individual. Someone who is absolutely almost unfeeling to sit through all this and be unimpressed. Why? Because we are so taken up with our own agenda and ourselves. We don't think about the owner of this operation. We think we own it. Then when the time comes to give credit for what we've achieved, if we achieve something in this life, it's not to Him we give the credit. I think it would be a good idea to keep in mind not only the fact that we have great privileges here, but that there's a purpose for our lives, that God has a purpose for us. We're not wandering down here to come out some way, one way or another, without any kind of plan or program. God's plan, His eternal purpose, is written in this book. And what is that purpose? Ephesians 1, verse 4. Even as He chose us in Him before the foundation of the world, that we should be holy and without blemish before Him in love, having foreordained us to the adoption of sons. Think about these men seizing the vineyard and killing the son. And the vineyard owner, if we see through this parable to the reality, he intended to make them sons. They were going to have the vineyard. And instead they robbed and murdered and took it. Or they thought they would. They didn't. The method we use to try to get the vineyard is a method that's not going to work. But if we'll accept the plan of God, He will make us heirs. 8th chapter of Romans, verse 14 to 17. His Spirit bears witness with our spirit that we are the children of God. And He goes on to say, and if children, then heirs. Heirs of God and joint heirs with Christ. That is His intention for all of us. Now, many of us have not accepted this program of the Almighty. We still busily engage in our own juvenile, mundane sort of affairs that will never amount to hill of beans and won't last even the length of this life, and certainly not beyond it. Certainly not beyond it. But what a blessing. But we've seized control of it for ourselves, haven't we? Now, I want to look with you at another place in Romans, Romans chapter 1, where Paul indicts the generation of his time and in the Greco-Roman world, the world of paganism and idolatry. And here's what he says in verse 20 of that first chapter. For the invisible things of Him, since the creation of the world, are clearly seen. We say, we never seen God. We can't deal with that. Yes, you can. You deal with a lot of things you haven't seen. One thing, you've never seen your brain. And if you've never been on the operating table and had craniotomy, you don't. Nobody else has seen it either. But we deal with a lot of things we haven't seen, but these things are clearly seen, he said, being perceived through the things that are made, even His everlasting power and Godhood or divinity, that they may be without excuse, because that knowing God, they glorified Him not as God, neither gave thanks. Here's our attitude. We seize the vineyard, we take our lives for our own, and we do not worship Him, and we never give thanks. Is that a picture of you? Well, I know you got some interest, and I love you for that, because you're here this morning. That's good. I don't think you'd even be here if you were just totally blacking this thing out. But I do want to warn you, and I warn my own brothers and sisters too, it's possible to be here quite regularly and blank out God. He's just sort of an empty space in the paragraph. We're here. It's a ritual we go through. It's a habit we've been in for a long, long time, but God is pushed out, and we leave here to go about our own agenda just like we did before we got here. We do not glorify Him as God. We do not give thanks. And that is a horrific crime. So what does this mean to us? What is our vineyard? Is it our life, our plans, our future, our career, our family, our image, our money, our properties? And we have said, this is mine. And I will control it. And I'll make the decisions. I would ask you to ask yourself this morning, when the transition took place from His to mine. And I would ask this morning, too, that Christians ask that question if they have left their first love and bit by bit what used to be His is now mine. We don't want
Anybody? Even God interfere with the way we are managing our lives? And I don't mean to say that you've been impolite about this. You're just like that boy that said he would go work in the vineyard. So polite, yes, sir, but did not go. We come in time to begrudge the little service we give him. Therefore, we want these occasions when we come together to worship be as, and I'm not talking about the preaching now, we want to be as brief as possible, get this thing done and over with, and we'll get out of here and do something that we really enjoy. You ask yourself that question. You're the only one who can answer it accurately, if that's how you feel about this time. Whether you anticipate it with joy or endure it. The only reason one would have to endure this is because he has not understood the first thing yet, or he has forgotten what he once understood of our relationship to the Almighty and all the joy and good things there are in life and what he has done to make that possible. The high calling that he's given us. I tell you, what this parable says is that God is just when he judges. Those men spoke the truth. What will that landowner? He will miserably destroy those miserable men. And he'll have every right to do it. His patient love over a long time treated with contempt. Remember, God is merciful. But it does not last forever. The time for judgment comes. And I speak about judgment this morning not because I want to make you sad, but because I'd like by means of that somehow to make you glad. By sobering you to the task that is yours, you've been put in the world by the power of God. Your lives continue because of his goodness and his moment-by-moment grace. You have been loved by him because he sees you as something special. To become something special, you are intended to be the heir to receive all that he has and is because you are his child. And you're losing it, perhaps, because you've tried to seize the vineyard for yourself. But the patience of God in this parable still shines through, although the judgment of God upon rebels is clear. What landowner, as I've asked before, would put up with such arrogance? Killed that long string of servants, murdered his son. But what we need to ask ourselves is how many of God's entreaties have we listened to and said, no, thank you? How many opportunities to change our lives and to be different have we known, sensed, and been aware of, and yet we rejected them? We need to take care for that. God is good, and he is merciful, and he is patient, but he will not always be. So as I conclude, stand on the tower, if you would, of that vineyard. Who do you see coming? Again, it is the Son who is coming. And the Father is saying, as he sends him, they will reverence my Son. They will listen to my Son. They have rejected a lot of other appeals, it is true. And they have seized the vineyard, and they're living like I don't exist, but I believe that they will reverence my Son. That is the story of the cross. It's another opportunity this morning, my friend, to say, I don't really own this. Lord, this is your life, and this is your world. And it has never belonged to me, even though I've acted like it did. Forgive me. I was out of my mind. But I am ready turn everything over to you by trusting in the Son you have sent and being baptized into Him for the forgiveness of my sins. You know what He will say? He will say, you do belong to me. And everything I have, to use the words of another parable, is yours. Come and let us enjoy the vineyard together. So He spoke. And so He makes us all think. And as we sing, if you're not His child, then come, take your place here on this front seat, and prepare to confess Jesus as Lord and be baptized into Him. And if as His child you need to listen this time and turn loose of your life as you promised you would, and let God rule and reign in it rather than your own agenda and the pressure of life and your values that you've developed, while we're standing and singing.